This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. This afternoon, we'll be talking about Ponder Anew, a World War II warrior story. Performances of Ponder Anew and their accompanying workshops are being used to help military personnel and combat veterans open up about their wartime experiences and cope with PTSD and other mental or emotional problems they may face. But first,
2,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago, the proudest boast was Civis Romanus Sum. Today, in the world of freedom, the proudest boast is Ich bin ein Berliner.
Those famous words uttered by President Kennedy during his 1963 speech in West Berlin in support of the West German government. His speech came 22 months after Soviet-supported East Germany put up the Berlin Wall. 24 years later, President Reagan spoke at the Brandenburg Gate, urging Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev to destroy the wall.
General Secretary Gorbachev, if you seek peace, if you seek prosperity for the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe, if you seek liberalization, come here to this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, open this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
This Sunday marks the 25th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall. On November 9, 1989, thousands of Berliners from both east and west climbed over the wall. Others went through the border crossing. Still, others began to physically chip away at the wall that had divided east and west for decades. Joining us to discuss the historic event and its impact on world politics is former U.S. Ambassador to NATO, William Howard Taft IV, and also Richard Schotte, Professor Emeritus of German Studies at the University of Cincinnati. And thanks to both of you for being here this afternoon.
Guten Tag.
Glad to join you.
Spoken in German very well, sir.
We would hope so.
Richard, the wall was erected in 1961. It literally cut Berlin in half. And give us some history about the origins of the wall, why the East German government took this step in the first place.
Well, if you think about the history of Berlin and the Cold War in the era after 1945, there are a few markers. East and West Germany came into being as separate nations in 1949. Just prior to that was a Berlin airlift when the Soviets blockaded Berlin. Then in 1953, the workers' revolt in East Berlin. 1956, the Hungarian Revolution. And after that, which was suppressed, and after that, of course, any number of Berliners. You could live in East Berlin at the time and work in West Berlin, go to and fro from the various sectors of the city, decided to vote with their feet. And there was a brain drain, one says, for East Germany, but for West Germany, it was a brain gain. And for that reason, Walter Ulbricht, the dictator of East Germany, decided one night, literally, to string barbed wire along the border of the Soviet sector. And eventually the wall was erected. And it's important to realize that the wall not only was along the border of the Soviet sector in the center of Berlin, but it actually went around the entire West Berlin. So West Berlin, to all intents and purposes, was a medieval city, a walled city.
It was enveloped by this wall.
Yes, yes. The wall took different configurations as it went around, but the hinterland, they didn't want people from the hinterland, because Berlin, you remember, is an island within communist East Germany. It was a bastion of freedom, if you will, West Berlin was. And it was a bone of contention, to say the very least.
Was this actually successful at stopping people from migrating to the West?
It was successful, yes, painfully so, if you may say that. During the period 1961 to 1989, approximately 900 people were killed on the East-West German border and on the at the Berlin Wall. About 140 of those were of the 900 were killed trying to escape across the wall. So it was effective. This East Germans, East Berliners realized that they had to simply accustom themselves to the status quo. And I know a lot of East Germans. I've spent a lot of time in East Germany. They came to accept the fact that unless you wanted to risk your life or unless you were a person of high importance who got permission to travel, and those possibilities opened up as time went on, you'd best stay at home and be satisfied at home, say the right things in public, and think your own thoughts at home.
It wasn't the wall, and it was ever evolving. They from the time they started it in 61, they kept expanding it. They kept fortifying it too, didn't they?
Right. Somebody once asked me about that very fact. It started as policemen holding hands, East Berlin policemen holding hands, and then concertina wire, and then concrete blocks, and then slabs. And in the 1970s, perfected, if you will, to the configuration that we have down here at the Freedom Center, 12 feet high, what looks like a culvert pipe on the top, and in an L-shaped configuration. That's the one that has become the icon of repression. And ironically, over time, it has become the icon of freedom, overcoming suppression. If you think of it, there are approximately 100 segments of the Berlin Wall in the United States. That's approximately a football field's length of Berlin Wall if they were all put together. So it really has become a significant icon of freedom.
The wall in its the worst days, it was a frightful, oppressive structure, wasn't it, with watchtowers, guards, watchdogs?
Yes, you named it, and I want to simply since I served on the East-West German border, also the frontier there was equally well, shall we say, defended from the West, and equally impossible to get through, although many people tried and died trying to do so. Sometimes I see people at the wall segment in the front of the Freedom Center, and they say, oh, that doesn't look like much. It's only 12 feet high. And then I suggest to them, try to jump 12 feet and hold on to a culvert pipe, which gives you nothing to hold on to. The East Germans were very careful, and I'd like to say the wall was an act of the perfection of engineering over time. It wasn't that thick, but it was hardened concrete with rebar, and it was hardened concrete so that if East German police shot at people trying to escape, the bullets would not penetrate into West Berlin, causing an international incident. So it was very carefully thought through. And in my intelligence years, I was a guest of NATO in Berlin to examine these realities, as brutal as they were.
Will, what kind of impact did the presence of the Berlin Wall have on the geopolitical climate? Chilling is a word that comes to my mind.
Yes, I think that would be right. It was also, though, a challenge to the alliance, NATO, which, as we heard, President Reagan was urging people to tear it down, and the longer it was there, the more it stood as a significant difference and a representative of the fact that in the West people were free to come and go, and in the East they were not.
Will, is it fair to say that this was a the ultimate symbol of the tensions and the fear that surrounded the Cold War?
I would say it probably was, and certainly was the paramount symbol. And more than a symbol, it was actually, as has just been said, concrete. You could see it. And then, of course, when it came down, the whole system collapsed rather rapidly. Within a year or two, the Warsaw Pact had dissolved, and indeed, although it wasn't anything that people had been looking for necessarily, the Soviet Union itself collapsed. So, and it was really the trigger for those developments which happened in the 2 years that followed.
Richard, one of the things I find ironic about the Berlin Wall is that it became covered with graffiti, didn't it? And,
right.
And the symbol of oppression has all these signs of hope and freedom painted all over it.
Right. And I want to just add a word to what Will said. The context of the fall of the wall is much greater than the 9th of November. You have to remember Tiananmen Square earlier that year. You have to remember the Polish elections. And we just had Lech Walesa in Cincinnati. You have to think of the fact that Hungary and Austria were in agreement and actually allowed East Germans to cross the border there. You have to think of Prague, where East Germans hold themselves up in the West German embassy. An extremely complex number of occurrences compounded in a positive way by the East German citizenry, these apparently disenfranchised East Germans in Leipzig and other cities across East Germany, who engaged in nonviolent demonstrations every Monday for months, for about a month and a half, against the regime. The East Germans were prepared to step in, but they didn't get permission to do so by their Soviet overlords, probably because of what happened at Tiananmen Square. What's interesting, of course, is that these demonstrations, the persons demonstrating came to sing, "We shall overcome." They knew what had happened in the United States with Martin Luther King. They started chanting in late October, "Wir sind das Volk, wir sind das Volk," which is an oblique reference to that statement in American history, "We the people." They were asserting their power, and that, along with how the politicians, George Herbert Walker Bush, Gorbachev, and others were at work managing this, not allowing the German Revolution, and this is where George Herbert Walker Bush, I think, was very smart. He didn't allow the revolution, the German Revolution, to be co-opted by Americans publicly. I don't know what happened behind the scenes, but this is the sort of a view I have. The heroism of these East Germans.
We'll have more about the history and the impact of the fall of the Berlin Wall after the break. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. My guest this afternoon, as we talk about a remarkable time in history, our former U.S. Ambassador to NATO, William Howard Taft IV, and Richard Schotta, Professor Emeritus of German Studies at the University of Cincinnati. And you can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Will, Richard was starting to talk about the forces that were coming into play that led to the fall of the wall. And from your perspective, what forces were you seeing that came into play that led to the wall's destruction?
There were several. One was a positive type of development in the Soviet Union, where Mr. Gorbachev, when he became the leader, was introducing more openness in the society and restructuring of some aspects of it, not taking communism apart, but giving it more attractive features and certainly opening up. Glasnost and Perestroika was what they were called. On the other hand, there were also some signs that the old system really was beginning to fail terribly. The Chernobyl accident of the nuclear power plant, the incompetence that was evident in the aftermath of the Armenian earthquake, a number of other incidents which showed that the system was beginning to crack, and just through a failure of competence and a failure to deliver a better life for the people who were subject to it.
A lot of different factors coming into play. I think you had described it earlier as being a dance of a type, all these different elements coming together.
A geopolitical dance, certainly. And the partners were not necessarily do-si-do-ing. So it was a fascinating series of events. I remember at the time I was chair of German studies, and I got a call from the local newspaper, the Cincinnati Inquirer, and they asked me, as chair of the German department, whether the wall would ever fall. They called me, I think, in October. And I said, no way. I just couldn't believe it. And when it did, I happened to be in Berlin, in Germany, and I went to Berlin and walked from Checkpoint Charlie to Bernauer Straße by the Brandenburg Gate, taking photographs, some of which will be displayed at the Freedom Center on this Sunday. And I remember standing at the Brandenburg Gate, looking at the people dancing on the wall, and I literally broke into tears. It was so powerful for me.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. Let's talk with Richard in Westchester. Good afternoon, Richard. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. This topic, of course, has me very excited because I was a soldier in the Berlin Brigade between 1967 and 69. So, you know, only 6 years after the wall first went up. I knew I was stationed on an island in the middle of communism, and as a soldier, you know, we were told we were essentially just the tripwire that would start the war if the Russians were to attempt to take West Berlin. So we always knew that. But then again, I had an experience twice. I guarded Rudolf Hess at Spandau Prison. I loved as a civilian on weekends to just walk along the wall. It was something that really insulted your civility when you first see it. You can't believe it exists. And then I have to add, it was amazing because as a civilian, I was back working in Germany at the Mainz Army Depot from 1986 to 92. So the period that the wall came down was there. And every time a conversation
came... Hello?
We've lost contact with him. So, sorry. There's some interesting stories
very
he was starting
into, interesting
perspectives
though. And a very enriching perspective. As I said, I was in the U.S. military in West Germany, serving on the border. And just the year that Chancellor Willy Brandt, who later got the Nobel Peace Prize, and President Willy Stoph of the German Democratic Republic met, first in Erfurt and then in Kassel, and I was stationed in Kassel. So people like the caller and myself have so many memories of this event of a personal kind, and that's what the public diplomacy initiative of the German embassy is all about. And this event here in Cincinnati on Sunday, beginning at 3:00 until 5:30, is in response to the initiative of the German embassy, And any number of organizations in Cincinnati jumped at the chance to affiliate the Munich Sister Cities, the University of Cincinnati, NKU, and the World Affairs Council. One of our speakers at the event, I will be speaking, and then the Consul General from Chicago is paying his first visit to Cincinnati. He just was installed in Chicago in August. Will, of course, be there as the principal keynote. We'll also have some words from Fabian Schma, the CEO of ThyssenKrupp Bilstein, the firm which, at my naive question, I asked him, how much would it cost to ship a segment of the Berlin Wall from Berlin to Cincinnati? And he looked at me and called his one of his compatriots over and said, could we fit a segment of the Berlin Wall into one of our containers that he was getting from Germany all the time? And I had the feeling that was not a question, it was a command. So it didn't cost us anything to have this segment sent. The city of Berlin, the Lord Mayor of Berlin, gave it to the city of Cincinnati, to Mark Mallory, essentially, at the time. And we were so fortunate to have this group of altruistic supporters in the community to bring the wall here. And we're celebrating Cincinnati's connection to Germany in this event. And it's going to include or conclude with a laying of the wreath at the segment, and then a balloon release. The reason for that is Berlin is celebrating with a release of 8,000 white lit balloons on the same day. So we are kind of a Klein Berlin here, a small Berlin.
What a beautiful sight that will be. And there is a link to more information about the event on Sunday at WVXU.org. Let's talk with Jim in Delhi. Good afternoon, Jim. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hi. I just wanted to comment. I was actually stationed in Berlin in the 1980s and up till 1991. I was there November 9th, 1989. And I am the president of a veterans group. We're called the Berlin Red Legs Fraternal Association. We are all veterans of the city of Berlin. We served in the artillery units there. And we actually had our biannual reunion in Cincinnati last year, and we had a wreath-laying ceremony at the Berlin Wall exhibit at the National Freedom Center. It was quite an experience to live in Berlin, and many of our members served in the Army, some of them for 20 years, and all of them hold a really special place in their hearts for Berlin. I love the city. I was there for almost 7 years, and it's amazing that it's been 25 years, and just the changes in the city are unbelievable. And as your guest mentioned, while we were there, while I was stationed in Berlin, I never would have dreamed that I would be there to witness the Berlin Wall actually come down and eventually the reunification of Germany. I was on President Reagan's honor guard when he was there, and I was there to witness the reunification ceremonies at the Brandenburg Gate. It was really something to live history.
Incredible time, wasn't it, Jim?
You have touched history, Jim, and I hope that the events at the Freedom Center will touch history. I unfortunately was not at the ceremony that you mentioned, but I was at a ceremony where we hosted the veterans of the Berlin Airlift at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, and I'll never forget these elder gentlemen in their 80s, some of them in their 90s, and one man came up to me afterwards and said, my participation in the Berlin Airlift was the most moral thing I have done in my entire life. Nothing has beat that event. And I sense that those words could be meaningful to you also.
Jim, thank you very much for the call. We really appreciate it. Will, how did the fall of the Berlin Wall affect world politics?
Well, as I
broad question.
I I think it was the signal for a disintegration of the Soviet Empire in Eastern Europe. All of the countries of the Warsaw Pact separated from Russia, and indeed some of the Soviet Union, the Baltic states, which had never given up on their right to be independent and free, which had been snuffed out in 1939 as a result of the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact, they immediately seized the opportunity. It needed, of course, a great deal of careful handling, which I do think the first President Bush and Secretary Baker deserve a lot of credit for managing that transition in those states. But gosh, the impact on world politics of the wall falling and then everything that followed was extremely significant.
It set off, I believe, about a decade of advances in freedom after that. I'm kind of curious, what's become of things today? What's the state of freedom today? Has the 21st century been as hospitable to freedom around the world as that particular period was?
I would say that the 21st century, really starting in 2000, has not been a time of great advances for freedom, particularly since 2008 and the financial crisis. Some of the autocracies have been doing rather better, and have certainly economically in China, and they have been becoming rather shameless in promoting their style of social systems, which are repressive. So, and my organization, Freedom House, records these things, and in the last 8 years, it has not seen any advance in the numbers of people living in freedom. So we still have our work to do, and maybe that'll be the celebration of the Berlin Wall and other great advances will be an opportunity to rededicate ourselves to get to work and increase the amount of freedom that people enjoy around the world.
Will and Richard, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Vielen Dank.
Former U.S. Ambassador to NATO William Howard Taft IV and Richard Schade, Professor Emeritus of German Studies at the University of Cincinnati. We'll take a short break. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. And after the break, the story of Ponder Anew,